Hello and welcome to the Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. Today you're joined by me, Ram.
Me, Hassan.
And unfortunately, we don't have our third usual member, but we will see him soon. So I was going to try and do an impersonation, but I just feel like maybe I won't do that.
And me, Levi.
Yeah, I mean, he always forgets to say his name, so he might be here and you just don't know.
You'll never know. You'll never know.
So there we go. So today's episode is about women, because I am a woman and Hassan knows women. So why not?
This is the best weird energy start I've ever had to like one of these. This is so good.
I'm so sorry. Like, it's gonna be weird energy. I've had a really long day at work, so and my brain is very frazzled. I've just read a play about tragedy, a Greek tragedy, but modernized. And it was kind of messed up, but that's because the tale was messed up. So you know,
there's no softball Greek tragedy. They're all insane. All a mess.
But it's even more insane when you make it modern, because you're like, but anyway, so my brain is a bit frazzled, so apologies everyone. Hopefully that probably will mean that, you know, makes for some entertaining listening, but not
embrace the chaos.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So yeah, International Women's Day is coming up on March the 8th, so we just thought we'd, you know, catch that kind of with this episode. I think also I've just generally been thinking about female characters a lot, particularly in my MA. We talk about, like, you know, feminism all the time and like representation, and also just I think a lot of the things that I've been watching recently as well have had me thinking about the way that we portray women on screen. So yeah, I just thought we needed this episode.
We don't need an excuse. This is a good one. Yeah, exactly.
We don't need an excuse. But, you know, timely. But before we get into that, I guess this isn't really news per se, but I just guess we want to, you know, talk about the Golden Globes a little bit. Award shows in general each year just are always disappointing, for mostly being wrong sometimes. I'm looking at you, Emily in Paris. I'm not against saying that did not deserve a nomination, because it was Trump. It was rubbish. I was gonna say trash and rubbish at the same time.
The Pokemon rubbish. Yes,
yeah, it was rubbish. So but I think, you know, in general, like, you know, year after year there's always something to kind of talk about, or something to critique, because somehow even after Oscars so white, they're just not really getting the message.
no, they got the message. They were just like,
yeah, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
like, so this year we, you know, I guess everyone was a bit skeptical. We did kind of have some controversy with things like Emily in Paris getting nominated, but Michaela Coles, the series just went, I May Destroy You, sorry, not getting nominated, despite being like very well received. But, you know, last night we had some wins, or early this morning, depending on where you are. Daniel Kaluuya won Best Supporting Actor in Judas and the Black Messiah, which is great, especially since he's been nominated for, like, it's kind of, I've never seen anything that he's in that he was like, not a scene stealer or just like absolutely amazing. So I feel like it's kind of like about time.
I feel like for me it's personally painful to say even in Queen and Slim he was amazing.
Yeah, he was.
And everything about that movie makes me like, I don't want to compliment it.
He knows how to do his job. So it was good to see him nominated and win. John Boyega also won for his acting in a limited series for Small Axe, which was also great to see, because we love to see Black talent. I think also it's really
Black British talent.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, but I boys, think even on. More so with John Boyega's win, not necessarily because over, I'm not doing John team Daniel, but just more so that like Small Axe was a very Black British story as well. So it's nice to see Black British actors winning for portraying Axtus. Black British. What?
Axtus.
Oh my God. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, Axtus yes. winning for like Black British stories, which is cool. And then I guess the other piece of news that was great was that the first Asian female director won this year.
Yes.
Chloe Zhao, who directed Nomadland, which I haven't watched, but you know, that is great news. And I think the director category in general was quite, there was like three women in there as well. So it would have been a win if any three of those won, because Regina King was up for...
This is the first time, right? Like, three women have come up for the...
I feel like it. I feel right? like the last woman that I remember was, like, Greta Gerwig?
Yes.
For Ladybird.
Yeah, that film is really good, by the way.
I really like that. Really so, yeah, I mean, I might be mistaken, but I feel like that is the first...
It's, like, completely stacked list. Yeah, it's amazing.
Usually so it's good. Always, like, one. So I think it's just... amazing. And also I think also when you just have like so many women in one list, it does make you feel a bit less like they're tokenizing someone.
For real.
So yeah, that is an amazing win, and hopefully this kind of stuff will keep happening, because you know, like, white men aren't the only people who are talented. That's all I'm saying. So you know,
there's like, you know, sometimes we need like this kind of this false proof of concept. And this is like proof positive. It's like there's Black women, Asian women, white women, all of them like doing unbelievably incredible like movies. And they all deserve like awards. And like, it's so cool that they all were there together. Like that was, that was awesome.
Yeah. Give them their flowers. But yeah, I guess just like congratulations to all of those wins. But as always, award people do better, because it's embarrassing, frankly. And also, I think it's just you, like, you're kind of doing a disservice to yourself when you do these kind of things, because people start to look to other places to find the movies that, you know, should be celebrated. And definitely, like, from in my own personal journey, like from now, from before to now, the weight that I hold with like awards academies like the Golden Globes and the Oscars is just waning. And I think that's kind of a disappointment, because it shouldn't be waning, because I feel like they're not listening or looking for the talent that's out there.
I've got two questions for you, because I think you are like, out of the three of us in the pod, are like the most knowledgeable and kind of the most like insider knowledge on these kind of subjects. One, do you think you're like do you think you're like your waning kind of enthusiasm for this is because you are becoming like disillusioned by the process, or is it because you finally kind of like, as you grow, you actually see what the process is? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you're a kid and you see something, and then going back as an adult and seeing it, like, it's vastly different. Is there an element of that?
I think it's probably both, to be honest. Like, I think that when I was a kid, obviously I didn't understand what the process was, and I just kind of took it as like gospel. Like, I remember, like, just me and my siblings can reel off to you like which films have won what, like, Oscars in what year, because it was just such a like a kind of like you trust those academies, I guess, when you're younger, because that's what is like, you want to hold the Oscar, and like that's kind of what the dream is. But I think that as you get older and you see what the process is, you do kind of start to become a bit like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know if, like, because not much has changed. But I think also at the same time, I am more disappointed that as I've grown up, they've had so many opportunities to change and they don't do it. And I think that's what's the kind of other side of it, of like, it's not just like they have the chance to kind of regain what I used to feel about them, but they just have to make, yeah, they just need to make the necessary changes. And like I said before, like it's not even just becoming like bitter or anything, like it's fully embarrassing. Like I think I just mean personally, as in like I just find it a bit like do you know what I mean? Are you not ashamed of yourselves? That's the kind of like,
and if you're not, shouldn't you be?
Yeah, like I'm just like, do you not want to still be like, you know, where people used to see you?
My second question then would be, do you think the Oscars and these awards are for anyone outside of acting?
I think some are like today actually I was talking to my colleagues about this very subject, and we were just saying stuff like the SAG Awards do tend to feel a bit more like of a celebration and kind of something that extends to people beyond the film industry, because I feel like, well, actually I would say that those awards kind of are still quite film specific, but I think for the film lover like me, who's not really that involved in like the scene, it's something I really enjoy like watching. Whereas I do think the Oscars and the Golden Globes have kind of become a bit of a like a you know, like
a circle jerk.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but yeah, basically it's just like, haha, you made that. Like I think it is very like, it's less less open.
I feel like, because for me, I love movies, I love TV, I love like kind of all aspects of like entertainment, but it like watching award shows, I find is very difficult for me to kind of like stay and kind of get in and get like invested into it, because I'm like I'm so tangential to any part of any of this that I feel like it's kind of perverted me watching it. I'm like, it's weirdly voyeuristic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this just me? Am I crazy?
I do think part of it is to do with the fact that I am a writer. And so obviously I've just always had that dream where I'm like, and the Oscar goes to you.
We're going to be in the crowd and I'm going to be embarrassing myself.
Please do not. I mean, I'm probably embarrassed myself by like falling up the stairs. So, you know. Let's
just do a barrel roll.
Yeah, just like I probably will just like ask them to give that like, come down to me because I'm not moving. If that were to happen. So I think that is kind of part of it as well, of just like being
aspirational.
Yeah. Even though now I'm like, I don't care anymore. So kind of lost me there. But yeah, let's get into the main episode. I think we talk about representation on this podcast a lot as well, and I think we do talk about like almost every angle that we can, but I just thought it would be cool to dedicate an episode specifically to the ladies. I think as representation is kind of becoming more and more of like a want and a need by society, we're kind of getting to see more stories from different types of people. But I wanted to kind of talk about the differences between surface level representation and actual meaningful representation, because I think that people get those confused a lot, and by people I mean people who make movies or make media get those confused a lot, and
people who tweet a lot.
Yeah, those people too. But they'll kind of like just throw things at you and say, oh, this is representation, here's a woman, here's a black person, here's a gay person, like, and
yeah,
like you need to do a bit more than that. Like that doesn't,
like,
really,
if I'm in a poster on the wall in a scene in a movie, that's not representation.
Exactly. So like, and I also think that especially when you are handling groups that haven't been as well represented, you have to do your due diligence, because a lot of the things that you put out there can be harmful if you don't, you know, actually do the work. Write a good story.
For real, there's this, it's like I think like everyone to a certain degree, we're like guilty of this. I'm guilty of this. Like, everyone's guilty of this. Like, you know, when you watch a movie and you see someone, a kind of political group or a like racial group or like a gender or like a sexuality, like that you don't understand.
Yeah.
The first snapshot that you get, you tend to kind of latch onto that, and your brain kind of files that away, and you can't help but use that as a reference point.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I find like a lot of the time, like if you see a movie talking about a subject, like mental health is like a really big one, where like you see a lot of mental health conditions when they're represented in movies, it's like hugely ballooned out, like really kind of like this gross caricature. It
drives me crazy.
like literally like specs. It's like these really serious things. Like I finally watched The Joker, by the way.
Oh god.
And like
I
was like, I just have to at this point, right? But it's like one of the things that like I really hate, like in the representation of like a lot of mental health issues, is the casual link to violence. And it's like, what? What? That makes it's so wild and it's so dangerous, like an idea that you can lump together those things. It's like we need to like really work better at like representation in those angles.
Yeah.
And like with women, like how they're kind of portrayed in movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
We're gonna get into it. I guess we're gonna talk about both what making a good female character actually looks like, and what making a bad one looks like. I guess we should go with bad first because we want to end on a positive. So I guess my question to you first of all is, what makes a bad female character to you? Like in anything that you've watched, whether it's like video games, films, manga, whatever, what are kind of characteristics that you that just great?
For the most part, like I think the things that bother me most are usually just bad writing. Like, it doesn't matter if it was man or woman or anything else. Like, if this was applied to them, it would be horrible, right? I find like a lot of the time, like there's this kind of this 2D angle that writers kind of tend to tack with women, and it's, even if they're like capable, they're like either like they're very capable but they're like not very good at being people, or like there's some sort of like disabling factor to them as a person or a character that kind of pushes you away from being able to like understand or empathize with them, because it's just that 2D plane that you kind of have to interact with. Like, you get like this smart woman, but she's kind of sidelined by all the other characters who are like, oh, we're gonna go do the thing, and it's like, are we gonna listen to the smart woman who knows what she's actually doing? No. And it's like, that's so wild to me. And like the weird duality, like you get a lot in like movies where it's like, if they're beautiful, they can't be smart. If they're smart, they can't be beautiful. Like, if you open with your sexuality, you can't kind of have any other angle to your personality than that sexuality. And it's like, what? That shit makes me mad. Like that 2D kind of paring down of characters really like makes me mad.
I think that's like kind of similar to I think in doing the outline for this and stuff, I think that a lot of the problems with most female characters is that they're underdeveloped, and that tends to be like the main crux of, like, even when there are characters, because I think also like when I was thinking about examples, there were some characters that I pulled and I was like, oh, I really love this character, and then when I thought about them and I was like, oh, but they're not really a character, they're just kind of like they're just cool and that's it. Like, I couldn't tell you anything.
They're a trope.
They're just so I decided, speaking of tropes, that's a great segue. I kind of decided to look at three main tropes that I think have personally grinded my gears when it comes to female representation. So the first trope is women in the refrigerator. Have you heard of this trope before?
I've not heard about it in this name. But like going through the the file, like holy shit, like I've seen it so many times and I've never realized that there was a name for it.
Fridging, or women in the refrigerator, is a trope which highlights the use of injury, death, rape, and depowering as a plot device, usually used against women, which often helps to motivate the male characters' story arc or move them forward. It was first coined by a writer called Gail Simone in 1999, referring to an incident in an issue of Green Lantern in which Green Lantern returns to his apartment to find that his girlfriend, Alexandra DeWitt, has been killed by a villain and stuffed into a fridge. It's quite typically a comic book trope, but you can literally find it in any piece of media. Mario, like you said,
it's like the whole Mario thing is Peach gets kidnapped and that's the...
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Oh my God. Yeah. And I think... Mm. Yeah, let's just discuss the trope because that's kind of how I set it out. Like, obviously it's bad. We don't need to tell you that it's bad. But why is it bad? I guess I think for me personally, it comes back to that thing of like, it doesn't allow a character to develop beyond the means of whoever they're serving as a plot device for. And it just means a lot of like stunted growth for that character, but also for like the male character, because you just never really get to know that person. So like, for example,
you know their revenge, you know nothing else.
You like, all you can attach to them is, and I also kind of find it a little bit traumatic because I think, especially in incidents where the event is rape or something like that, or death, I think you leave that woman just stuck in that moment of trauma and you don't know anything else about them. And I think that's really, I have an obsession with trauma, as you may come to find out, but you don't allow a woman to live outside of those violent moments. And I don't know where else this point is going, but
I can jump in.
Yeah, that's an issue.
There's I think I've said this in like past episodes as well, where it's like, it really pisses me off. Like, there's this kind of convention in writing where it's like, the value of the woman in the plot is only to serve as like counterbalance either to the man or to be a point of plot contrivance. And like, using trauma, like something that's like real, as a plot contrivance, really like it detracts from like the reality of the situation, people who actually live with those issues. Like, you get that a lot with like PTSD in movies, that, like, where it's like you see it for like 5 minutes and then it's like, oh no, we're good now. And it's like, no. Like, these things are serious issues, and like paring it down for like effectively a full stop for the point of your movie, it's disgusting. Like, it's frankly disgusting. And it's like, the amount of times that we see rape, or kind of the allusion to rape, just used as like punctuation, with no context, with no kind of they don't ever go back to it either. They just kind of go, nope, let's go.
No, especially in things like Game of Thrones, like, which is the word, like, and I just have such I mean, there's two ways that can go. One, to not empower a man, but like to motivate a man, or to motivate the women. Both are bad. Both are, this is not like, it's not a character development piece of like plot device. Like,
and do you think that's the only way that you can motivate characters?
And I'm just like, no. Well, like, I'm like, at least if you're going to do it, at least do, you know, a complicated story, because I think that, you know, it's not, no one's saying that that topic should be completely off the table, because I do think that people do have experiences with that, and you know, there are very interesting stories about, you like, you could even write a really good story about a man dealing with the impact of like his girlfriend or wife or partner or whatever being raped, and having to live with like, how do I take care of her? How do I do that? Like, you know, there's a story there, but it's just
even
not
for Game of Thrones, right? Even for Game of Thrones, like the fact of like kind of medieval history and sexual violence towards women is real, right? You can talk about these things. You can talk about them from the angle of the people who survived them. You can talk about the people who are living in that situation, who know it's a daily kind of occurrence, or it's a threat that they have to kind of live with over their head. You can deal with that kind of healthily, constructively, and like intelligently, in a way that you build a story with actual meaning, rather than just going, we need to shock our audience.
Yeah, Yeah,
because I'm
basically,
like,
it's not a shocking fact. Like, you shouldn't be using it as a shock factor,
right?
Because also that's so cheap. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I think I'm gonna be saying the word embarrassing a lot. I'm gonna say it's embarrassing. Are you not embarrassed mm-hmm. as a writer that you can't think of anything better than that? Mm-hmm. But I guess there's also, I don't know, fridging is just such a prevalent thing in like meat, like. Someone was like, oh yeah, Christopher Nolan films. And I was like, oh my God, yeah. I was like, yeah. And like, I think that's the problem, that you barely even register it until you kind of come across a term like this and you're like, this person, this person, this person. Even I guess like Greek tragedies, actually, like all of them.
I think like my favorite like kind of description of like that feeling is like, yeah. You know, paper mill towns, mm-hmm. They smell of methane because like the way they're like processing the paper. So like if you're in the town, you can't smell it because yeah. You live there, you're in there, yeah. It's there all the time. But then the moment someone says it, you're like, this is the only thing I can smell.
Yeah. it's everywhere. Yeah. I think the most kind of like when I actually first learned what the term was, or a name for it, was when they were discussing that. I don't know if you watched Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So obviously Vanessa dying in that, everyone was like, well, that was fridging, and there was a lot of arguments for and against it, but I do think that Vanessa in general has been a lot of like Deadpool's motivation in both films, so I do mm-hmm. think that it does kind of come under that. I do think it's a bit more like complicated because we know who Vanessa is as a character, and she did actually,
she had a moment, yeah. she actually had a moment to kind of develop and have yeah. a meaningful impact to the plot further than her death.
Exactly. So like, it is a bit of a sticky one, but like, I think that
that's the line.
That's the line. Like, just let, we can do that. We're not going any further.
It's like, I don't want to say like, because that's the thing, right? It's like, if someone murdered a member of your family, you'd be hella motivated.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if you're writing a book or a script or a movie or whatever, there's more than that to motivate your characters, right? I'm like, why is every single movie or every single comic book movie or like action movie, this is the contrivance, right?
I think the main thing though that makes it more so fridging is when the woman kind of just disappears after that. and you just don't hear from her ever again, whereas I think that if it's kind of a journey that you take with the male and female character together, then I feel like it's a bit different.
Why don't you just take your partner on the adventure with you?
Yeah, maybe like she wants to get some revenge too, what the hell.
Maybe just that. I'm saying to the writers, I'm like, don't kill them.
Yeah
Take them with you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So, women in the refrigerator is tiresome trait number one. Number two is a complicated one. It's a complicated one. And that is the Mary Sue. I feel like everyone's kind of come across this term before. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who doesn't know, it's a female character typically who is unrealistically free of weaknesses. It's quite a prevalent trope amongst adolescent books and media. The term was coined in 1972 by Paula Smith, who wrote a parody story which basically satirized the idyllic kind of female characters in Star Trek fan fiction that were just kind of like overpowered and just like super cool, super like just everything. And
this is also where Star Trek is like way more wholesome than Star Wars as well, because it's like still kind of nice.
Like, yeah, I'm like, this is the biggest problem you guys have, like, it's like,
you're too nice.
I'll take it. And the male equivalent is a Gary Stu or a Marty Stu, however this and I did think this, I was like, well, you rarely hear that term bandied around, and I think it is because like it's not really seen as an issue for a man to not have any weaknesses, because for example Superman doesn't have any weaknesses, arguably, and no one really calls that out as a character flaw. So
it's also like the kind of unhealthy standard like that you're told you're meant to kind of go towards as a dude. Like, yeah. You know, you're not meant to have any weakness. You're not meant to show any emotion. You're not meant to do all these kind of things. Like, no, that's hella toxic. And that's just really gonna, that really messes up people. Like,
yeah.
And we need to kind of move away from that.
But I think in the same way, I think the Mary Sue is very complicated because it's harmful in like two kinds of ways. I think it, A, kind of in this kind of media, especially when you write books that are, because I've definitely read a lot of like young adult fiction or like teen fiction when I was younger where it had this perfect female character, and I do think it pushes this idea that women have to be perfect, and in order to be a main character you can't have anything wrong with you. And I think that's like, that, well, that's not the point of a main character. Like, we shouldn't always have to like them. They shouldn't be perfect, because that's like what makes them interesting.
Like, no good book starts with a character at the end of their journey.
Yeah, like,
no, like, we want to see the journey. That's why I'm reading the book. I want to see them grow and change.
But I think at the same time as well, the trope also gets thrown around on the other side from like neckbeards and stuff. People are like, well, she's a Mary Sue, she's, and that kind of is meant to discount a character from being useful at all. So it's a bit of a complicated one. What do you think about this trope?
For the most part, it's doing something negative from a place of positivity. And that's like, I totally get like a lot of the reason why people like write Mary Sue characters. But like, it also creates this very, this very lazy writing circle that we're kind of sitting in, where it's like, if you're not writing a Mary Sue character, like, a lot of the time, like, the way that like people talk about those characters, they're like, oh, they just, they're a neckbeard, or they don't understand women, or they don't like women. It's like, if you understood women, you wanted to write a compelling and kind of like organic human woman, they would have faults. They would have like complexity. They wouldn't just be 2D, right? No human is perfect. Like, no human comes with their flaws, and like, no kind of compellingly written human comes finished, right? So like, why should our female characters be that way?
I guess the two examples that I had as well that came immediately to mind was Rey in Star Wars. And I think with the character of Rey, what being a Mary Sue kind of did for her is that it just made her so boring, and we just had no interest, well, I had no interest in where her character was going. And I think also that is why so many people ended up latching onto Kylo Ren. And that is why Kylo Ren then, who was meant to literally be like a supporting character, kind of ended up taking
sweaty
off, because
incel nerd.
He just had a bit more story to him, because he actually had like, and he had something that Rey could play off of. And I think that's an issue, because obviously Rey is meant to be the main character, and she kind of, I know that Star Wars is in, to a certain degree, kind of an ensemble piece. You do kind of like it, there are teams and stuff, but at the end of the day, Rey is the main character, and she just, we didn't care about her at all.
I'm not gonna lie, I was like trying to like figure out like a good analogy and like a sports analogy, then I was like, I don't know anything about sports. Yeah, like the thing, like I think like Rey bothered me a lot, because like from a couple of angles, because like the actor, she's really good, like Daisy Ridley can act, but she had like a horrible script to work with and horrible directing to work with, and they gave her no chance to kind of expand beyond being what, like, nothing basically, like something to play off of, and it's like, we had such a chance, guys, we had such a good chance here, and it was like, come on.
But they ruined
I think like having Mary Sue characters added into like these big franchises as well is like doubly awful, because it's like, when you have like a big franchise that's like had like, that's got this pedigree, that's got this history, and you do something that's like forward moving and it's going to change things, you have like a real opportunity to like insert like kind of a better behavioral pattern. Like, you can kind of go, okay, we're starting fresh, we can start in a better trajectory.
Yeah.
And then we got this. We got the hell.
We also kind of got it with Captain Marvel as well. And I think the real shame in both of those as well is that it stops you from being super invested in the characters. And personally, like, being a Gary Stu in, or being a Mary Sue, for me, is, but I don't like Superman, and everyone who knows me knows I don't like Superman, and that is part of the reason, because I can't really invest in him. I don't like, but I think it's worse kind of when it's a woman, because we just, it does mean that they get written off very quickly. And also, mm-hmm. it's kind of sad to be watching this and knowing that you should be thinking, wow, this is so cool, but you just can't invest because there's nothing else to the character apart from the fact that they're really strong and they're the chosen one and they are the main character, and that's the reasons why you're supposed to care. And they're a cool woman doing cool superpowered things, but it's like,
we gave you a woman, guys, like, are you happy? It's like,
no. Do better, because there's more to the cat. And I think, again, in Caps, like, there's never a time where you feel worried about these characters, and that's kind of going through that journey is what makes you really latch onto a character in the first place, when you feel those stakes, whatever they are. And stakes don't always have to be like they're gonna die, but like you feel some kind of, like, even whether it's emotional stakes or like mm-hmm. actual physical stakes, like you want to feel that in order to feel like you know the character and to feel that you are on this journey with them. And I think that both of them were lacking that because they don't really have any depth.
Do you know what I really want to see, like, kind of come back, like small like very contained movies,
mm-hmm.
because like escalating stakes in small spaces just is like such an excellent like kind of compelling piece of like cinema for me.
Yeah,
like, have you seen that that film The Party? Where it's like The Party.
The Netflix one where they're at the party, and then he's like with his new girlfriend and his ex-girlfriend and his
fantastic. Yeah. That movie is fantastic. And the whole thing, it's like, it's these little microcosms of drama that's kind of all like building and building around each other. It's like, no one's gonna die, mm-hmm. no one's like, nothing's on fire. Like, it's just, it's this very human kind of expression in the movie, and that's like, I kind of want to see that more, because like the way it kind of forces storytelling and like writing to like really get creative with how they're using their characters and kind of how they're building their characters. Cause like, you know, when you're in a small space, it's very difficult to go focus on one. Yeah. And it be organic.
Yeah.
But like, man, when they do it right, it's amazing.
That's what a writer told me in a workshop. They were like, you need limitations, and mm-hmm. that's what brings creativity. But kind of like, I guess my last note from me anyway about the Mary Sue thing is that I think that you do kind of have to compare these characters to male characters. I think where people make unfair judgments, you do have to also consider, okay, well, how is Captain Marvel that much different from Thor? And then that's what I feel like, that's where you kind of identify where the issues are, because I think, for example, they're both quite overpowered, but I think Thor, you're kind of invested with the idea that he's got to win his honor back. You're invested with the fact that he actually does have a relationship with his brother Loki. So I feel like that's kind of where he's had,
at that point, I think 7 movies.
Yeah.
To also develop as a character.
Yeah.
2 of them not being very good, and he still got the 3rd to kind of get it right.
Yeah,
like, so like before, like people who use that kind of as like a fair comparison, I'm like, it's absolutely not.
Yeah,
it's absolutely not. If they introduce like Captain Marvel in like other movies first and like let her grow kind of as a character rather than throwing her in going, she's the new Tony Stark, without saying that,
yeah,
and then making people go, why? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just
Ray and Luke Skywalker. I feel like in those examples you can kind of see where it is. Even though I'm not that attached to Luke, to be honest with you. I don't care if that's blasphemy or whatever.
No, it's fine. Like, but if you're not attached to a character, you're not.
I'm just not attached to Star Wars. Sorry. But yeah, moving on. The last one is the angry black woman. I hate that trope. I'm gonna say that not angrily.
Do you know what the worst part for that is as well? Like, it's used so offensively actively in situations where it's like, where you have a legitimate reason to be angry and you can't get angry because you're just going to be thrown into that camp.
So, I mean, I'm sure everyone's heard of the stereotype, but again, it's both a stereotype and a trope that portrays Black women as sassy, ill-mannered, and ill-tempered by nature, defined by Pilgrim, which is like a website thing. It's a social control mechanism that is employed to punish Black women who violate the societal norms that encourage them to be passive, servile, non-threatening, and unseen. It's also a derivative of the sapphire, which is kind of like, those are the kind of the main archetypes that were talked about most in the antebellum South. So kind of when you think about the sapphire, the mammy, that kind of thing. And it was a term that was used to describe dominant portrayals of Black women as being aggressive, dominant, and masculine, and is more so applied if they are dark-skinned Black women, as we know.
There always has to be like several like levels to this racism.
So you got a little bit of colorism in there, you got some misogyny in there, and of course you've got the whole racism. I think this trait for me as a Black woman obviously is the most harmful out of these traits. I think we talked kind of earlier about how the fact that tropes can be harmful, and I think particularly tropes about, well, tropes about any kind of like minority group, to be honest, tend to be, they do harm in real life, literally. And I think it's almost more so if you are a Black woman, for example, these are the kind of tropes that, like, you know, I can't really put it lightly, but like this kind of stuff can get you killed, for example, because people have stereotyped you as this. This could cause you to lose a job. This can cause massive overreactions just because it's a trope that's been kind of played over, over and over and over and over again until it's kind of become a truth in society, even though it's not. And like you said as well earlier, like it is a double-edged sword, because I think the main problem with me about this trope is there's nothing wrong with having an angry Black woman on screen. But I think the issue is that this woman does not exist. People kind of make this woman exist in a void in which she doesn't have anything that she should be angry about. And when you do that, you kind of, you displace the reason why she's angry in the first place. And you kind of, you belittle and kind of bind her.
Remove her humanity. Yeah. Like, she's not human. She's just this. She's anger, right?
And I think that, you know, whereas if we had portrayals of where, you know, an angry Black woman is put in the situation where she deserves to be angry, I think that's what we need to see more of, because then you'll be like, oh, like why wouldn't she be angry? I think there's a play by Debbie Tucker Green called An Eye for an Ear. An Ear for an Eye. One of those. Look it up.
Eye for an Ear sounds better.
But I think like one of the main things about that is that it asks the audience to get angry on behalf of the things that they see on stage, because they should be angry. And I think I feel like this trope can only be reversed by kind of doing that, by being like, okay, she might be angry, but this is why she's angry, and you should be angry too, actually. And we should all be angry about this.
If you're not angry, why are you not angry?
Yeah, because you've got issues, major issues. Probably ending in isms issue
on that scale of things.
And I think for me also another thing that's quite disturbing about this trope is that we kind of repeat it ourselves in our own, well, I don't want to say in Black films, but in films that are made by Black filmmakers. For example, this is why I don't watch Tyler Perry. I do not want the man to die, but is it if his films so kind of Tyler Perry movies, and if you think about the character of Medea, and literally the fact that it's called Diary of a Black Woman, Mad Black Woman, like and then you have women like Rasputa from Norbit, which is even more problematic because it's a Black man dressed up as a Black woman who's presented to be quite masculine. But there is
Tyler Perry.
There
is Tyler Perry though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. And then also, but in Norbit, I think also the fact that he has a biracial love interest as well in that. So you've got the colorism thing coming in there. And then I think Boondocks, it's difficult because they do obviously have satire in there as well sometimes. But yeah. I do think that...
Satire only kind of really works if you have like a point that you're making.
Yeah.
Right. If the joke just becomes I'm saying the thing that I'm not meant to say, it's not a joke.
Yeah.
Right. That's where the line is for me, at least.
I agree. So I mean, there's not really much that we can say about this trope except that it's terrible.
Stop it.
Stop. But I think also what's so another issue with it is that like. The angry black woman is also rarely ever the main character, and I think if they were the main character then it would be a bit different because you would actually see why she was angry. Whereas it's usually, you know, in reaction to something else that is never kind of painted to be justified. It's always unjustified anger, which,
and everyone looks at each other going
exactly.
And they always have that scene in like a movie where there's the angry black lady. Everyone looks at each other knowingly.
Yeah, and it's like,
what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ask her why she's angry? No, get out of here.
So yeah, please can we stop this? I had some other honorary mentions, which were You're Not Like Other Girls. Which is my least favorite, one of my least favorite.
Can we just throw that tall girl movie in there?
Oh my god. No. I think You're Not Like Other Girls. This is not progressive. This makes it.
It's progressive.
And I think it just like, it, first of all, it pits women against each other. And I'm not going to lie, every single girl, well, most women definitely go through a stage where they are like, yeah, I'm not like other girls, in order to gain some kind of satisfaction from either themselves or male attention, whatever.
It's going to carve out a niche and like, again, like,
and it's like, no,
that's human. Like, it's not good, but like you grow out of it, or you learn to, or, like someone teaches you how to kind of
get
out of that.
I was watching a video actually, and she literally was like, yeah, my generation, we bullied not like pick me's basically off the internet, but now they're like back. But we did, because it's like, it's not cool for you to say, I don't do this. Like, I don't wear makeup. I'm not like other girls. Like that kind of stuff is not seen as a good thing anymore, but it is making a comeback because it makes a comeback every.
Here's my hot take. They're the exact same as those dudes who are like, I'm a gentleman.
Yeah.
I'm so kind.
Like a nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, but I think what's worse with You're Not Like Other Girls is that it kind of perpetuates like misogynistic values that men already have, because they'll be like, they'll pit women against each other by doing like, that.
That's what you guys are like.
Or no, or even just being like, oh yeah, she's not like them. You're kind of like doing this separation. But I think also, and then it's also just harmful to women themselves. Whereas I feel like nice guys don't really affect men that much, but they really do they?
Yeah.
How?
Super creepy. Because it's like there's
As in they don't affect other men's as much as, okay, well, I don't know, you'd have to tell me, but I feel like it's
like behavioral patterns where like guys will get lumped into like groups because of certain guys acting that way. Like this doesn't really matter like what the subcategory of dude is, but like there's negative aspects to it, and all guys kind of get painted with that.
Is there a positive aspect to not like other nice?
No, no, yeah. There is. But like, but at the same time, you see what I mean? It's like of all like the subcultures, I think is the right word. There's negative elements that kind of get painted onto the
guy. Of course. Of course. I think it's just more what I mean is that when you see. There was a time, or sometimes it still kind of occurs, where you're not like other girls as a trait is not. I feel like most of the time, nice guys are kind of portrayed to be something that you don't really as problematic, if that makes sense. Whereas I feel like not all the time.
It's weirdly predatory. Predatory behavior. Like,
what I mean. Like, most of the time, it's portrayed as being quite problematic. Whereas I feel like You're Not Like Other Girls often kind of walks that line of like. Sometimes people are a bit more self-aware of what that what that actually means. And but most of the time people take it on as a positive thing, even to this day, even though we're still aware. So that's what I mean by
I feel like it's a bit more. It took me a while to kind of figure out what
I'm
being an idiot today.
I think the other one is also the funny fat women, because like, why can she not be more than that? Why can't she just be a character? I know, because fat phobia, but like,
because she's fat, she has to be a clown for you.
That she has to have like kind of these progress. I think kind of the funny, sexually active fat woman is also now like, the new thing, which is again kind of another like 2D kind of like, oh look, like we're not saying she's ugly, like we're saying she's sexy, but like you never really see her with a man. She doesn't really have a fully fledged like character. Yeah, like sometimes she comes off a bit aggressive, and I think that's also not great.
I'm still so like freaked out by that. That was a kids movie.
That was a lot. And I think my last example as well is the Madonna and the whore, because that's like again pitting women.
Why are we still doing this?
I don't get it. Especially in like teen movies, I feel like this is still pretty prevalent, and I don't like it. Let's stop. So before we get into good female characters, I wanted to talk about two complicated characters examples. So actually I might just keep it at one. But I think the main reason that I'd kind of been thinking about this topic in general was thinking about the characters of Sakura, whatever you want to call her, in Naruto in particular.
I thought you were gonna go card captors. I was like, deep cut.
Not that. But like, you see so much hate for this character, and I also don't really like the character at all because she is trash. But I don't blame that on her. I blame that on the fact that she was written very badly. And I think
my hate characters is never the character.
Yeah, obviously, unless it's like light.
No, if they're written to be awful, like then that's good writing.
Yeah.
But like, get into it, because like.
I say this because I think a lot of people take quite like a misogynist angle when they're talking about the character, almost forgetting that this is not someone who actually exists. Like this is terrible writing. It's not that the character's just there for you to hate because they're lame. This is a character that's not been developed well. And I think just kind of like thinking about, there's so many moments where she could have been developed, or she started to get interesting, and she's never kind of given the time of day. Literally, she's never given the time of day at all. We don't really see her developing her skills. A lot of her character,
everyone else gets a montage. She doesn't get
she doesn't get nothing. And a lot of her character just kind of leans on Naruto or Sasuke or both, mostly Sasuke. Like a big part of the reason that I hate Sasuke is also because of Sakura. Like I don't want to hear what I don't you that's irrelevant we're talking about
we don't have time for our Sasuke hate. That's a whole nother episode.
Let's just move back to where we were actually talking about. But I think the fact that I almost feel like what was the point of putting her character in there, and I think we've kind of talked about this in regards to like characters of color, for example, but I almost prefer just to be absent if you're not going to actually do the work to actually put a character in there. Because she doesn't really, she's there in the trio, and I think that and we'll get into this when we kind of talk about more like positive examples. She could have been a really good way of kind of inspiring girls who watch the show, but also inspiring boys who watch the show, and being like, oh okay, this is what like a capable woman looks like, this is what a healthy friendship between three children looks like, who are, you know, like of different two of them are boys, but like, you know,
do you know what's so much worse, right? He competently proved that he can write like a complicated female character with Hinata.
She's way more than Sakura.
Like,
no, whole, she's like, more complicated
with her family and the way that she's growing up. And the
but
way,
he
like,
doesn't do anything. Expected of... I disagree.
In comparison to Sakura,
but that's the point. That shouldn't be the bar. And I think that's
fair.
That's why I did Sakura versus Hinata because I think that you're like, oh yeah, Hinata's a cooler character because you know she's got a power that's actually quite capable. And she goes on a little journey of being this shy woman to like being able to fight and stuff, but that he literally does the bare minimum with that character anyway. And also when you look at, I was watching a video, I think it's by Sage Rain, so go check that out on YouTube. But he kind of did like a comparison of the two characters and how, and he referenced a writer who writes about like manga representation and like kind of like, in this case, it was like gender in like manga. Yeah, so check that video out because he probably explains everything a lot better than I do. But his whole thing of was that also that Sakura is quite like abrasive and quite a loud woman. And like a lot of people hate her for that. And the reason a lot of people love Hinata is because she is the more submissive. Mm. Yeah, she kind of has the bigger boobs. Like she just... like just follows him around a lot more. So I think that if she wasn't like that character, I wonder whether people would kind of jump on and say, oh, she's the better character, because they wouldn't. Yeah. So I struggle to, both of them are not written.
Why I'm kind of coming at her for like being a better character is because she had like a actual,
she's definitely a better character, you know what I mean? Yeah, but
she like they kind of gave stakes, they gave reasons, they gave like kind of a setup of why she is like she is, and then she grew and changed.
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay,
yeah, like, which is better than nothing, but it's still
because it's like if you look at like 90% of the characters that they introduce in that show, none of them get that. Kiba doesn't get that, Shino doesn't get that, like none of them get that.
Yeah,
it's like five characters maybe like get in any sort of development.
Team Shikamaru forever.
Yeah, for real. Rock Lee is the best.
Rock Lee is also the best. So we're gonna move on to some female characters because we want to end on a positive note. I guess I just want you to give me one example of your favorite female character that you can think of and kind of break down, I guess, what it is about them that you think makes them good or memorable.
Ripley from Alien, Sigourney Weaver. She amazing, like one of Janeway's also really good.
Gotta pick Ripley, one.
I'm gonna go with Ripley, right? Because like Ripley is in a movie that's so competently written and so competently put together that it was one of those ones where it's like from every single angle, they like some movies, like, you know, where you get like a very good and very strong female lead, it's because they didn't really bank on the rest of the movie, they were just like, oh, we're gonna give it to you, and then they like come through in the clutch and like it's amazing. This one, everyone is amazing, and she stood out so far above every single person in this movie. She was incredible, and it's like 34 years old and I still go back and watch that movie, and I hate horror and I also go back and watch that movie, right? It's so good. Sigourney Weaver is just like incredibly kind of like charismatic and like compelling in the way that she kind of comes across as Ripley. Incredibly intelligent engineer, tough as nails, doesn't take no crap, fights a giant alien with a giant robot, like you can't really ask for more. And she also saves the cat. There's like, there's so many points where they write this character as an actual human being. She has this relationship with her cat, and it's like, if you own a pet, they're family to you, right? She goes back in an alien infested ship and saves the cat. That is good writing. Like, that is, she's a perfect lead. Like, Ripley in the Alien movies is a perfect lead.
I guess for me, I think, so this is why I just had to look it up, but I think a lot of Studio Ghibli films for me showcase a lot of female characters that I think are really good and memorable. So I was thinking Princess Mononoke, who's but also
Sen as
I
well.
Think
Sen is so good.
Yeah, I think that I was gonna say Chihiro from Spirited Away. That's why I had to look it up because I forgot her name. Oh yeah, see, sorry. But yeah, I think that that they, I think these characters don't, I think Hollywood in general punishes women for being women at all, and that you find in a lot of examples when you have a memorable or good female character, according to Hollywood, they often have to kind of have all their female traits removed from them, rather than leaning into them. And I think that's more so especially for like little girls. I think even today you see kind of like teenage girls can't have anything without someone judging them or saying that that's lame or being punished for what they like or being told that actually they're only doing this because it's for attention or whatever it is. Like you just can't exist. You can't be girly, you can't be a tomboy, you can't be alternative, you can't wear makeup,
there's things where I'm just like, you're lashing out at someone and you're claiming that they're doing it for attention,
and I'm like, what are you doing then? But I think that kind of Studio Ghibli films allows these characters to be what they are, but also so much more as well. Like you kind of get to see, for example, and I guess in Spirited Away, the fact that she is a child kind of plays into that factor, but you get to see her cry, you get to see her struggle, but you also get to see her be super happy, you get to see her be really strong and really determined, and also have a lot of, like, I don't want to say honor because I don't think that's the right word, but like have a lot of resolve. None of those traits kind of cancel out each other. Like, you know, they're all part of what makes her as a character.
I think My Neighbor Totoro as well, like, is a really excellent example of that, where it's like, it tells a story of two little girls without the need for like action or something to kind of distract you. It's this very kind of competently told, like very beautiful, like told story about these two little girls growing up. And I'm like, that is,
and
so
they're
good.
Both super different from each other as well, which I think is another element. So we've talked about our favorite characters, but I think I don't really have tropes because I don't think tropes can ever really ultimately be good because you don't want to repeat something over and over again. Because
to be a trope, it has to be a crutch.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So I guess this is more a list of like good signs, and you know, throw some suggestions in there as well of like what it takes to create a good female character. So my first thing is emotional, and this is not to say that all women are emotional, but I, for example,
all guys are emotional too.
Everyone's emotions. Well, some people aren't emotional. I feel like everyone has emotions,
and like that's not a bad thing.
No, I'm just doing this as a disclaimer, but I'm just saying that like, as a woman who is emotional, I don't think that we always need to portray this as being a weak point. I think that actually, for example, me being emotional has meant that I'm very emotionally intelligent, and it means that I'm very quick to understand, like, it's helped me deal with my own anxieties, and it's been like a source of strength. And I think that we don't really show emotional intelligence or empathy as being like a strength in many films in general, in any kind of character, but I think that it's something that we should embrace and bring into the fold for female characters. For example, in Spirited Away, again, her love for her parents and like being lost without them is basically the main plot of like her wanting to get them back, and that's not like a weakness. I think another example is kind of Furiosa from Mad Max Fury Road. She is this like strong woman, but she is strong because
you gotta
of
hand
her.
It to her.
Yeah, like, oh my God. she's a strong woman who is driven by, or you could probably say, like, I would say like sisterhood or even maternal instincts. And those are what makes her a strong character. It's not just that she can fight. Like, she can fight because she's seen what women in her world go through, and she wants to be able to protect them from that. And so that is why she's so strong. I don't think we need to separate.
Take a note, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if you have any other examples of emotional women.
Not that off my head.
Fair enough.
Like, the moment you put me in the spot. Like,
I think she was the main one, but there's like loads of women. I think we're starting to see more like, you know, feminine traits or whatever being kind of not seen as being weak in both genders, to be fair. But I think
can we have that across the board, like kind of an education on kind of emotional like maturity and competence, because it's like there's nothing worse than kind of being told like your emotions are invalid, because like that trickles down into everything you do, every way that you think about the things you do, and like they'll never go away. Like you really have to like work to kind of get past that. It's like you feel what you feel, like that's totally fine, and like you should totally feel valid for feeling that way. Like
I thought I had another few more example, but I didn't. That's why I'm looking at my bookshelf. And I think also, like, again, the main thing do you have one?
In Janeway, legitimately, like, such an amazing, like, character, and, like, the way that she, like, looks out for her crew, like, everyone, like, individually, she understands them as people and kind of, like, works around them. Top notch. And when it comes down to it, she'll get out the guns and fight with everyone else.
Exactly.
Top notch.
You can be both, but you can also be not both. Which brings me to my next point. I think diversity in general, and I mean this by having like many types of women interacting with each other and being able to kind of, and I guess this kind of feeds into the not like other girls trait. Like, yeah, most women are not like, we're all unique, and that doesn't have to be a point of separation at all. Just the way, like, you know, every human being is different from each other. We don't have to be a monolith. And I think that a massive problem is that, like, in the things that we read or watch, that there tends to only be one woman, and that means that she has to shoulder kind of the representation of all women, and that's not right. Whereas I think the more female characters you include, the more space you have to kind of play around with. The example that kind of came to mind was Katara and Toph, and this is because I've nearly finished Avatar finally, but I think that the fact so that so these good. Two, and I think this is was highlighted in a specific episode where you have kind of a moment of tension between Katara and Toph, because they're so different, they kind of come to they kind of rub each other up the wrong way a lot, but it's never kind of to the detriment, and you're never supposed to see one as being better than the other. Like, they're both equally valid in like their frustrations with each other, because they are very different human beings. And you know, Katara is, you know, meant to be the more motherly and girly, but like her traits are that she's very wise and she's very empathetic, and Toph is more of a tomboy, but she's also determined and she's protective. And I think the two kind of like key moments that kind of highlighted like why they're both such great characters and why their interaction with each other is so important is, one, the way that they both train Aang, and how vastly different it is, but the fact that is that they both managed to get him to his end goal. Like, he learned to earthbend because Toph was so harsh with him and really pushed him, and so that's showing you that like her way of doing things was not the wrong way necessarily. And Katara was very gentle and very encouraging and had a lot of positive reinforcements, and that also works. So it's like, you know, you don't have to pit these two women against each other. But also when they have that argument where you know, Katara is being accused of being too motherly, and I think that kind of conversation that they have with each other is just so important, again, for the same reasons of just being like, they are two very different women, but you don't have to kind of minimize one person's trait because they're both, you know, great people. And
they always come back together as well. Like, doesn't matter if they fight or not, they still support each other. Like, and they implicitly go like, I trust you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's so good. So good.
And also just like their value to the group is like, you know, I think, again, the fact that both of them, and this is why I just like, it's blowing my mind from a writing perspective, because I'm like, the fact that you've chosen to make Sokka the guy who doesn't have any powers means that you have these two women who are kind of like the powerhouses, even when Aang isn't, but also they are the anchors to both characters, because Katara often, you know, brings Sokka down, and not down in the sense of like, you know, like down, but like as in, you know, she brings the
comic relief.
She kind of gets to kind of teach him certain things, but he also gets to teach her certain things, and the same with Toph as well. And I think just the way everything is written is just amazing, is top notch.
Would you like, call it mind bending?
I would call it mind bending. yeah, like so. Yeah, more examples like that.
Steven Universe too.
I haven't actually watched Steven Universe yet, so
you'll love it. It's very good, very good.
Yeah, I think just the more types of women that you get to see interacting with each other and interacting with other men, like just the more that you're really gonna get out of it.
While we're on the subject of Avatar, Zuko and his relationship with his dad.
Yeah.
Oh, but man,
no, let's not get into it too much, because we are meant to be focusing on the women. And also I'm episodes out from finishing the whole thing. So I think we already kind of touched on this, but like just generally room for development, because I feel like a lot of female characters just get stunted. And I think it's like, for example, Sakura could have been a really good character. And I think that the people I kind of compare her to are like in Jujutsu Kaisen, a lot of the female characters there are very well developed, and they haven't even like, I mean, all the characters are well developed, but they don't like, you know, we haven't seen a, if you're watching it, like you haven't seen, it's not like they've spent like 5 episodes fleshing out these characters, but it's in the little ways that they build them and build their interactions with other characters and their backstories that allows you to get all these different types of women who all have like a pinpoint of like what they're about.
There's small details as well, like mannerisms that really anchor them to being human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the way they like play the hair or something like that, or like look or like kind of like, that you see the way the anger builds in certain characters and it's very, very, very human. And like the way they kind of react to certain stimuli, like it's so good. It's so good.
So basically be like Jujutsu, and I especially found it very inspiring in the episode where what's her name again, Nobara is fighting against Broomstick Girl.
That fight was wild.
I mean, it was a great fight, but not even just that.
The context underneath it. Like,
yeah, the conversation that they had exactly about being women and what kind of pressures are that. I think it did everything that, like, because I think, for example, Sakura's character could have been very interesting if you talked about the fact that, like, you know, she's the only woman in the group and, like, she's got these two men who are coming from, like, who are extraordinary, basically. What does that feel like as a woman, having to compete with them, having to be in that group? Even her love for Sasuke, like, what?
That isn't love, that's obsession.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying love with the quotation marks. I don't care about that stuff. But, like, you know, there's interesting ways to, like, explore that. And I think that Jujutsu Kaisen does that way better. And just shows you that you don't even need to spend that much time with a character. Like, you can still have your main anime boy be the main protagonist and spend more time with him. You just need those little things to actually flesh out the character.
Do you know, like, not having like a relationship kind of like angle to the female character as well in this is so good. It's so good.
Yeah, like, you don't need to be in love with everybody. Jeez.
It's so not necessary, and it's so well, like the way they tackle it in like fiction as well, with the, when, like, with Toto, where he's like, what kind of girl are you, like, and she just looks at him like yeah, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, so I think that, but also like even characters like Katniss Everdeen, which, you know, I have a complicated relationship with the Hunger Games, but she is a character who, first of all, is quite unusual because she's not an emotional woman at all. Like, she's, you know, and she's quite, but she's written like that on purpose, and I quite enjoy that about her character. But also the fact that she grows as the characters, she grows as the series goes on, and you see her kind of like go from someone who had one simple motivation, which was just to protect her family, but also kind of play with the idea.
Arrows good,
huh?
She arrows good.
Yeah, I thought there was a pun in there, so it was like, huh?
But then I sometimes I just play it straight just to like keep you on your toes.
Well, you did that, but. Yeah, like she learns from the other characters. She learns about, for example, love beyond just like her family, but also like what her morals are and like actually standing for those morals as someone who's very powerless. And I think that that's quite interesting. No matter what you want to say about the Hunger Games, like, that is quite an interesting example, especially for like young women. You know,
I think like as well, when people judge that movie, it's like,
what
are you for kids, dude?
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
It's like, as much as like I love,
I don't think it's bad at all, the first one. I think for me it's just more that they didn't need a second or third movie. That's what I'm talking about.
I've not seen it, but like it's like Twilight or any of the other ones where it's like, I know it's fun to like to no, but you know what I mean, it's like, yeah, it's fun to rip on them, but at the same time it's like, it is what it is, man. Yeah. It really is what
I
it
mean
is.
Yeah, Katniss is a way better than Bella, but anyway. And then I guess, and do you have anything else to add on to the list? I guess my last one was just nice agency boat. Well, I was just gonna say agency.
No, that's my pun.
Oh, there's the pun. See, I missed the timing. By just giving women more agency, I think, like, you know, we are living in a time where women already do have more agency. So let's actually see that in our work as well. Like you said, that we don't need to rely on like a romantic relationship. Mm. And I think that will come with like women writing more stories about women. Yes.
I want to see like women in movies where they're not directly competing with each other. Cause like,
yeah. Yeah. Teamwork, guys. Teamwork.
It's just kind of weird now.
And I think also this is more so the case in, like, I think all of these points are even more important when we talk about, for example, Black female representation or Black trans representation or women who are not straight. I think, you know, like, it's a very complicated thing that you kind of have to take the time to unravel, because I think especially in those groups that I just mentioned, like, anything you write about them that is negative or like kind of layers onto a stereotype that already exists is very harmful,
because it's difficult to counteract, because people who already have that, like, who that have opinion, that,
exactly,
they're gonna be like, see, yes, this is, we told this is you examples.
Yeah,
and it's like
which is why, again, that I think that amongst all of this, because I think kind of with the examples that we've given, like, these are written by various people. I'm not going to go through and list everything, but I think that the more that we give different types of women the time to write the time and the space to write their own stories, you will start to see stories that do have more realistic representations of women that are, you know, good. And when I say good, I don't mean that we have to like every woman that we see on screen, but I'm just saying that they need to be a good character, and that they need to be careful to not to fall into harmful stereotypes. Which is why I recommend everyone watch Insecure, because that's my favorite example that I'm gonna.
It's an excellent written show.
Recommend, because I think that Black women are represented very well in there. I think their relationships with each other and their relationships with men are written very well. And then Avatar is obviously my other recommendation, because I think when I think of female representation, it's not just about female representation by themselves, but I think it's like how they interact with, especially in like children's media, because a lot of the things that we have to uncondition ourselves or are conditioned to think when we're adults come from what we see when we're younger.
Absolutely.
And I think that, like, in examples like Shonen, when people are like, oh, but Shonen is for boys, so it doesn't really matter, and it's like, well, yeah, it does, because A, girls read Shonen, too, B,
no, just that. It's, like, it's called your formative years,
yeah, like,
or it's called exactly. That for a reason.
So you need to show young boys, like, that, you know, women are not just the 2D characters that you put in who are just meant to, like, kind of further their purpose. And I think especially since we do always talk about, like, nerds being quite, like, isolated and all that kind of stuff, not all nerds obviously, but like nerds of a certain, you know,
persuasion,
yeah, if you put this stuff in their media, they might resist at first and say that it's pandering, but eventually the ones who are young enough will learn that they're like, okay, like, and you know, you can have
the
healthy
old bitter ones will die,
yeah. The young ones will get to see that, you know, you can have male female relationships that are healthy, that don't have to be romantic half the time, like, you know, like, this is, you know, these are the ways that we teach people. So let's
for real. if this helps one person, it's good. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if this can, like, impact one person, like, it's a net good. Mm-hmm. Like, hopefully that person can then impact other people and so forth and so on. Like, mm-hmm. we don't have to, like, with every movie, change the world. Mm-hmm. But, like,
do we not? I'm joking.
No, but, like, if we change, like, a small, like, microcosm, and that microcosm changes everyone around them too, like, that's a good way to kind of spread that change. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm happy to see it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's mostly it from me. I think just my recommendation is also consume positive media. I'm very big fan of, like, you know, making sure that you're supporting and watching things that actually align with the things that you want to see in the world. So, you know, let's do that. But yeah, so what are you up to? Not much, to be honest, again, because I'm just really busy all the time. So I've just been reading One Piece and watching Avatar, which I'm nearly finished now. So I probably will finish it tonight because I need to chill out for a bit.
I am currently, like, back on Animal Crossing. The Mario update came. I will be posting some stuff up probably by the weekend on our Twitter, probably on our Instagram too, I guess. Like, just, like, redone some of my island. I think it looks pretty cool, but you'll see when you see it.
Forward to seeing it. I have not visited my island for a very long time.
Everything is weeds.
Yeah. So I'm really scared. I might go back to it eventually, but I just, like, simulation games are just really hard for me because I won't play anything else. Mm. And I do want to play more games that are kind of, like, out of my comfort zone a little bit. So
come visit my island at least.
I might do that. If I can. The thing is, I'm just going to get sucked in. So I'm like, was it worth even just opening it? I'm just going to go in, update it, and then leave. That's what I'm going to do. But anyway, that is an episode, I think. You can find us on The Nerd Alternative on Instagram, The Nerd Alternative without an E on Twitter and Reddit. I'm assuming because you're listening to this, you've already found us somewhere, but we are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Anchor.
Please subscribe to us on all those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Please subscribe to us on all those things because it does help, like, with the metrics. If you can leave us a rating and review, that would also be amazing. I would really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.